So that brings us to our friend Christopher Hitchens, who, as you know, is dying of esophageal cancer.
Yeah.
And he's being interviewed frequently. And, of course, this subject always comes up, you know, the end-of-life conversion, the reconsideration. He said recently to Anderson Cooper in a long interview, who asked him that, he said, if you hear me convert, it won't be me. It will be some semi-conscious, heavily drugged, catatonic drooler. It kind of, in a way, I heard Hitchens at that point sort of subconsciously recognizing the God gene within himself, that set of genes that Dean Hamer, wasn't it, believes human beings inherit that predisposes them towards spiritual or mystical experience. Where do you come down on the God gene? Do you think it's possible? I mean, it's certainly true that a large majority of human beings seem to gravitate towards some kind of theology. Atheists are a minority, and so are agnostics, maybe a larger minority. But most humans do seem to gravitate to something spiritual, something supernatural. And perhaps Hitchens, in that statement, was as in denial as he is and as stubborn as he is about his atheism, was deferring to his God gene.
Maybe. Or maybe he was just thinking about Evelyn Waugh, one of those writers that talks about, you know, deathbed conversions as happening, like foxhole conversions happen for some people. I think Hitchens is someone who is adamant about his atheism. I think it comes from his, call it training or development as a Marxist thinker, opiate of the people, being religion, and I don't think he wants to go down as a believer. And he won't go down as a believer. I mean, that phrasing that he gave Anderson Cooper is testament to that. But what you raise about the spiritual gene or the God gene is a very fascinating question I try to go into some degree. And I think I was maybe derelict because I've learned a lot more since then. There's been neurological study that shows that there really is this, I call it spiritual hunger in my book, that people have a desire for God or a desire for gods and religion. And is it from mortal helplessness? Is it from the fact that we're all facing the inevitability of death? I think that has a good deal to do with it. But there's also this study that's still kind of infant stages about what our neurons are attracted to and what, you know, neurotransmitters are all about. And you have people of faith saying, this proves what we've been saying all along. You know, it's been built into us by God, the Creator. And you have those who say, this just proves all the more that there is no God. It's just a part of happenstance and randomness and happens to be maybe in the DNA, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be used for that purpose.
You write that your friends, novelists Amy Tan, Isabel Allende, and Alice Walker, all have what you refer to in your book as strong religious backgrounds and are, as you say, spiritual seekers looking beyond the veil of normal perception to the paranormal world. How do you relate to friends with such different ideas about spirituality from your own? And are their perceptions of the divine closer to your own than they seem at times?
Well, in the cases of those three women, they're all very different in their way. And Isabel, by the way, wrote a nice blurb for my book where she said, I wish I, like Krasny, I wish I had faith. It would make life much simpler. We communicate quite well without necessarily getting into this whole territory. And, you know, I have different degrees of friendship with each of them that's been borne out through the years of developing relationships. But I think there's something in each of them that's looking for maybe beyond what I'm looking for. When they write literature, for example, they feel like maybe they're in communion with something deeper, maybe ghosts or spirits or whatever. You know, I mean, Isabel is not a person of faith. I don't know. Amy is the daughter of a Baptist minister, and Alice Walker comes from a pretty strong religious background. But they're still feeling that sense of the numinous. They're still feeling that palatable sense that there's something spiritual that is enveloping them, I think. And I can understand that in a poetic and a metaphorical way. What I don't really get is the sense that there may be something beyond me that's controlling my destiny or playing havoc with me or guiding me towards some light that will answer my inner needs. It's too enigmatic for me.
So what next, Michael? This is a very hard act to follow. What are you working on now or thinking about doing next outside of the studio, the radio studio?
Well, you know, I didn't know this book was going to creep up on me, Mark. I really didn't. I felt a need and an urge to write it, and I hope that there will be an urge like that again. I've done two books now, and I've done a lot of literary criticism. I think those days are probably behind me. As you know, I'm a self-confessed frustrated novelist who wanted to be a novelist and who failed at being the novelist that I hope to, you know, take the mantle of Sal Bello as my next adult incarnation. I don't know. Something that will challenge my curiosity that I hope will be worth the labor and the time. I mean, as someone who I admire and have admired enormously for the dogged and investigative reporting that you've done, you know, perhaps better than most, that something just clicks and sets you off and ignites, and then you're on it, you know, and it gives you pleasure and it gives you pain, and it, you hope, you know, works out to be the fruits of some labor. At this point, no idea.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned fiction because I was going to suggest that you do that. I mean, you've read probably more fiction than any other 10 of us. You certainly, and if you follow Stephen King's advice about writing, read. That's all. That's his one word of advice. You've read so much fiction. You must have a wonderful sense of story, and you probably have some great story ideas. Why don't you just take off for a while and write a novel?
Well, it may happen. I don't know. I don't think, you know, this is going to sound unnecessarily self-deprecating. I don't mean it that way. I don't know that I have the imagination to be a novelist. I think that's one of the things I discovered. I think you need to be, for one thing, you need to be a good liar to be a good novelist.
You're not a good liar.
Well, I'm not a terribly good liar. I mean, I'm more working always in the vein of seeking truth. I mean, fiction is a truth, to be sure. But somebody said to me, well, no wonder you've never written a novel. You know, you've done all this broadcast journalism and all this literary scholarship. And, you know, these are different kinds of worlds that you immerse yourself into that have to do with finding truth. And fiction is finding the lie to find the truth. And it's a different pathway. I'd love to be there, but I have to feel something compelling me there, I think.
Well, fiction played such a large role in the subversion of your religion. I think you deserve it. it deserves your service.
Well, it's nice of you to say, and I would certainly love to do what I can in the service of fiction. I'm just not sure that what I can produce will necessarily serve it, or serve it in the high and noble aspirations that I like to associate with.
Well, as you know, there are a lot of terrible novels floating around.
Yeah, and you know, I think about that too, because I remember one of my interviews with Rushdie, who, by the way, said that Christopher Hitchens' book, God Is Not Great, should be called simply have to do with the last word, do away with it, just call it God Is Not. That was very clever. Rushdie said, so many novels, and who's going to have time to read all these novels, and why do we need all these novels, you know? And one can ask that about any book that one's doing. Does the world really need this particular novel or book for that matter? Does the world need my book? I don't know, you know. And what is the world anyway?
Well, thank you, Michael Krasny, for coming in.
Thank you, Mark Dowie.
It's been a pleasure to be on the other side of the mic.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be on the other side of the mic with you and from you. Questions are very thoughtful, and I appreciate the time you put in.
We'll do it again. You've been listening to On the Fly, a production of Talking Point Radio. I'm Mark Dowie.